This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiaoyik. Now, I have a question for you. How is the human skeleton affected by space travel? And you may be wondering, who asks questions like that? And why would it matter to the rest of us who may never see the inside of a space shuttle? Well, there are scientists and researchers who study these. And a recent study that I came across, led by a researcher from Friedrich Alexander Universität Erlangen-Nürnberg in Germany, does try to answer that first question. And this study found that astronauts who spend long periods in space suffer damage to their bone structure and causes their skeleton to age prematurely by up to 10 years. But why does it matter to the rest of us who are earthbound? Well, I have joining me today to help us answer that question, consultant orthopedic surgeon, Dr. Rajesh Singh. How are you today, Dr. Rajesh?
I'm very well, Xiaoyik. Thank you. And I think the answer to your question is we ask these questions because they're one small leap for that individual paper, but one giant leap for collective human understanding.
Nicely done. So call us to extend your understanding of, how these questions go together. I mean, also generally, if you have questions related to bone health, because I think we will be making that link, in the show. You can call us at 03-7733-2900 if you have questions. You can also WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Perhaps we could start with a 101, Dr. Rajesh, to get the basics and understand when we're talking about the bones in our musculoskeletal system, what are we referring to? What are the bones made of? Perhaps I can start with that.
Okay, so shall we? I think let's start with the very common misconception that my medical students have. My medical students think that bone is dead. And they think that bone is dead and is sort of an immutable structure because, we have skeletons around the lab. You hear about, fossils that are discovered. You hear about bones which are sort of discovered in graves. And you get this idea that bone is an immutable organ. But bone is actually a living thing. So a great way to think about bone is like coral. So you've got sort of living organisms that produce.
Dr. Rajesh, I'm afraid your connection may be affected by the thunderstorm. If you can...
of coral. And the coral is actually alive. Coral can die, coral can regenerate, coral can grow. That if you can accept that bone, then you've got a good idea about where we're starting from with relation to bone.
All right. Sorry, is your connection all right, Dr. Rajesh? Just want to check.
It is now. Sorry, there's a massive flash of lightning where I am.
Yep.
And then it said unstable internet connection. So where did you lose me, Xiaoyik?
Actually, we caught up with you. You were comparing it to corals, basically.
Yeah. Okay, so the first idea that sort of people need to have is that bone is a living organism, right? Bone changes, there's turnover in bone. Bone is a living thing. And I think, that this idea that one of my medical students said to me, so that means bone has a blood supply. I said, yes. And bone has a nerve supply. I said, yes. So then she said, so you break bone, but pain. I said, you want to try? But, there's this disconnect between sort of the human experience of bone and the common sort of public perception of bone, that bone's like, wood or furniture that's immutable, right? So I think the first real idea is that bone is a sort of living, breathing, changing structure. And the fact that we use bones to do lots of things, we use bones for forensic pathology, we use bones for age, as establishing people's age, we use bones for lots of different things, doesn't mean that bone is immutable. It's just that we know what the common changes in bone are, right? So the first idea is that bone is this living tissue. The second idea is that bone is unique in that it is a mechanical composite. So if you wanted to sort of draw an analogy, the analogy would be like building. So if you want to make a building, or you want to create a structure, you usually have a metal scaffolding, and then on that metal scaffolding, you pour your concrete in. And your concrete has an aggregate of big rocks, small rocks, sand, cement. Now, if you want to make a very high-rise building, you put a lot of steel bars, I remember, you know, those of us who are old enough not to declare our age to remember when the KLCC, when the KLCC Twin Towers were being built, right? There's this huge thing about how much steel was put into those buildings about this idea that the steel that goes into the building is so much because the building is so tall. So bone, so the second idea is that bone is a composite, which means that it has cellular elements and it has connective tissue elements.
Mm-hmm.
And this idea that bone is a composite tissue is unique to the skeletal system. So you don't have it in hair, you don't have it in skin, you don't have it in any sort of other organ in the body, you only have it in bone. Okay, so those are the two fundamental ideas that people need to have. The fact that bone is a living thing and bone is a composite. The third idea is that bone is formed all the time and resolved all the time. And there are many factors that affect the formation of bone and the resorption of bone. And that's sort of where this relevance of this idea of what happens in space is really important. Because if you take an individual and you changed one parameter in their health, it would be difficult for you to assess the change of that parameter on what effect it has on bone, because there are so many parameters which affect the health and function of bone. But if you send somebody into space, or you send a group of individuals into space, we can say, well, you know, the one effect that we can clearly measure is gravity,
mm-hmm.
right? And so it's sort of family standardization exercise. So I think the value of looking at this paper is to say, why we change gravity for everybody.
All right, Dr. Rajesh, I'm so sorry. You are breaking up. There must be some intense lightning where you are. So this might be a good time for us to go for a break. We'll try and get you on your mobile phone instead. And hopefully the line will be a little bit more stable there over mobile. And I'm speaking to consultant orthopedic surgeon, Dr. Rajesh Singh. We are discussing, you know, kind of taking a recent study that looked at the effect of long space missions that astronauts go on and the effect on their bone structure, you know, and trying to understand, make the relationship with how we can sort of understand how our bones age, perhaps, or how they change, and, you know, use that to look at some really common bone health issues that we do deal with. Do call us at 0377 332 900 if you have a question about bone issues. You can also WhatsApp 0187 89 8 89. We'll be right back on BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Ik. Joining me on the show today, consultant orthopedic surgeon, Dr. Rajesh Singh. We are discussing a recent study, along with, there have been several others as well, looking at what is the effect on bone health among astronauts who spend long periods in space. The zero gravity effect does seem to have some impact on their skeletal system. And so we're trying to sort of first look at what some of these findings may be and relate that to what we can understand of our own bone health for the rest of us who may never get to go on space missions. We've been having some issues with connection, but let's try Dr. Rajesh again. Hi, Dr. Rajesh, are you there?
Houston, we have lift off.
Yes, that's right. Until the next lightning flash, but we will prevail. If we can send humans to space, we can do this. A simple virtual call, I'm sure.
I'm loving where this is going.
Do call us at 0377 332 900 if you have questions. You can also WhatsApp 0187 89 8 89. But listeners, do bear with us if there's a bad connection. We'll try to get Dr. Rajesh back on the phone. So that was a really great explanation of, I guess, some misconceptions, the main ones that people have about bones, and you know, what the main characteristics that you wanted to point out about them, that it's living tissue, that it's composite, it's made up of cellular tissues and connective tissues, and also that bones form and resolve all the time. And I wanted to pick up on that, Dr. Rajesh. What do you mean by forming and resolving?
Okay, so this idea, let's say that, you know, you look at any solid piece of furniture in front of you. Let's look at a desk, for example. So if your desk was bone, basically what it would mean is that every 7 years, your desk has just replaced itself. And in the process of replacing itself, it has reacted to the stresses that you've placed onto your desk. So that means that if you've placed something really heavy on one part of your desk and the desk has replaced itself, it'll find that that area is much more dense to be able to take the weight. And an area which requires less sort of force is actually less dense. So this idea that your skeleton is immutable is actually not correct. Your skeleton's only in general about 7 years old. So that means that there isn't a piece of bone in you that's more than 7 years old, because that entire area of bone has been scooped away, it has been absorbed, and it has been replaced. And I think that this idea of bone turnover is a really fundamental concept that's completely missing in the public domain, right? People think bone is bone. Well, you know, people understand that skin is not skin, because your skin sheds every day. You've got skin cells that come off your face every day, skin cells that come off your body every day, and that's replaced with new skin. It's the same concept with bone. Bone is replaced with new bone every day. It's just that the old bone isn't shed. Excuse me, it's actually absorbed.
Is it true that a reform and resorbing process means that you basically kind of have a new skeleton at the end of the cycle?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, actually, you don't have a new skeleton at the end of the cycle, because part of your skeleton is still 7 years old, but there's a part of it that's brand new. Mm. So you get a constant refresh of the skeleton, and that cycle takes about 7 years. So every sort of 7 years, you go through this whole cycle of having to replace the whole thing again. And that is actually for the components of, and that's true for all the skeleton, but it isn't true for teeth, right? Now, there's certain antibiotics which are deposited in bone, and tetracyclines is a class of antibiotic. And in Malaysia, in the early days, we used to give tetracycline to children. And what would happen is, as their teeth were forming, the tetracycline would deposit into their teeth. And so you'll find adults who have sort of black bands on their teeth. And if you shine UV light on them, they actually glow under UV light. And so that sort of banding or staining occurs because the antibiotic binds to one of the proteins, which is in bone and teeth. And in bone, that tetracycline rings or staining actually goes away after enough time. Whereas in teeth, it never goes away, because the same fundamental process occurs in teeth as well as in bone, except that in teeth, the process is one way, irreversible and permanent, whereas in bone, it actually is sort of this lifelong turnover.
Is it really lifelong, or does it slow down perhaps with age?
Okay, I mean, it clearly slows down with age, right? And the simple way to look at that is just to look at people's hair. You know, young people have thick, luscious hair. You get some old people with thick, luscious hair, but most old people will have thinner, scanty hair. And that's just because the hair follicle, the hair falls out, the follicle produces new hair, it produces less of it, and it produces it more slowly. So that's sort of a really great visual indicator to understand what happens with bone. Now, I've seen a couple of cases today which really illustrate this. One is a lady who was in her 80s, who unfortunately had a fracture of her hip because her bone is very brittle. She had severe osteoporosis. Then she had an operation to put a piece of metal in the bone. Now, the bone is so weak that the metal basically just cut through the bone like hot knife through butter, right? And so the bone is so weak that it is unable to support the metal which is put in to subserve the function of the joint, right? So that gives you an idea of sort of how dynamic the skeleton is, that the piece of metal that was put in, basically the bone moved around the piece of metal because the bone was so weak and couldn't support the weight against the metal. And now the bone has grown around the metal and is encasing the metal, and that itself is causing a problem. Mm. So the bone has remodeled, meaning that it has responded to the stresses around it. It's just that because the stresses were presented to it in a way that the bone couldn't respond effectively, it responded in a poor manner. And so you get this sort of poor clinical outcome because of the appropriate response in the poor circumstance.
All right. And this remodeling that slows down as we get older, is it inevitable for everyone?
It's the degree of slowing down. Well, there's a degree of slowing down, but how much it slows down largely depends on how fast the cycle was to start with. So if you're physically active, you've sort of had a good quality skeleton to start with, a high peak bone density to start with, as you age, what happens is the aging process, the sort of the repair cycles slow down a little bit, but they don't stop. So there's this idea of musculoskeletal health being this idea of, you know, loss and resorption. I think this paper is really important because while it talks about bone, it's actually a prototype for all elements of the skeletal system. It's a prototype for tendon, it's a prototype for ligament, meniscus, capsule, what else? Bone, periosteum. You know, this paper is important because it talks about a concept that's applicable to the whole of the skeletal system. So another gentleman I saw today, he's diabetic, and he has a problem with his rotator cuff in his shoulder, where when he lifts his arm up, he's got this pain. And I said to him, look, your problem is that your tendon is arthritic. And he said, well, what does that mean? I said, well, it's like osteoporosis, but for tendon, right? Where you've got the elements which are the tendon fibers, and then you've got the cells within it, and then you've got this thing called an interstitial substance or matrix that holds everything together. And in him, because of a combination of smoking, diabetes, a sedentary lifestyle, and a computer job, the cellular component has become excessive in trying to repair the tendon, and so the tendon is too thick, right? So if you measure the density of the density of the tendon would be less than a normal tendon, but the thickness of the tendon is more. You know, so I think this concept is really important when we want to talk about all elements of the skeletal system, that it's made up of elements, and the elements are in balance, and the balance of elements changes in relation to the stresses which are put on it, as well as general health.
Okay. You've mentioned density a few times. You talked about high peak, in people who may have high peak bone density. We also have a question from a listener related to bone density. So he's asking, my doctor has advised me to get a bone density test. What does it show? I am 60 plus years old. I do have osteoarthritis issues.
Okay, so first let's untangle the osteo. Right, there's osteoarthritis and osteoporosis. And so let's take the word osteo away, and arthritis means disease of joint. Porosis means sort of, you know, soft bones or bones which are very permeable. So osteoarthritis just means that you have some joint wear and tear. Osteoporosis is means that your bones may be less dense than they need to be. So a bone density test is basically a rough measure of how dense your bones are. It's really that simple. So if you take a piece of styrofoam and then you take a piece of rock of the same size, you know, you can paint the styrofoam to look like rock, but why can you carry the styrofoam and you can't carry the rock? Well, you can carry the styrofoam because styrofoam is just air and very little substance. You can't carry the rock because the rock's substance and not air. So density basically is looking at how dense is your bone, as in how much of it is literally air and how much of it is literally substance. And one of the concepts, again, you know, this whole bone thing is fraught with misconceptions. A bone density test is actually a statistical concept. It's not a biological concept, right? A bone density test just means that we have done a test on thousands of people, and we've found that this is the normal for those thousands of people. Normal being the statistical distribution of normal. Where are you in relation to these thousands of people? That's all it says. Once we know that, we look at other data and say that, well, compared to us, so let's take a simple thing, right? Let's say that I take a ping pong ball and I bounce the ping pong ball off the back of your hand, and I see how high the ping pong ball bounces. Then I compare that for 10,000 people of a certain age. And then I say, well, for 10,000 people age, you know, 25 to 35, 35 to 45, 45 to 55, whatever, this is how high the ping pong ball bounces. That's a statistical number. There's no biological meaning whatsoever. Now, if I correlate that and I say that if the ping pong ball doesn't bounce so high on your hand, it means something. And that's basically how the DEXA scan works. The DEXA scan looks at how dense are the bones of people, a healthy average population, and B, persons of your age. And then they say, well, statistically, your bones are significantly less dense than other persons of your age, which correlates with the risk of you breaking your bones, right? So this idea that it's a statistical concept is pretty important. It's exactly like blood pressure. Now, I've got people who come into my clinic with, you know, a normal blood pressure is 110, 120, the upper value. I've got people who come in with a blood pressure of 180 and they feel fine, right? But this idea of blood pressure being a risk for stroke and heart attack is a statistical concept. It's not to say that, oh, you have a blood pressure of 170, you will have a stroke in the next 5 minutes. It doesn't work like that. So the concept of statistical applications in medicine is something that the public really, really doesn't get. They don't understand that the statistics is an inference to what may happen. It's not biological certainty of what will happen.
Mm, but what can they do about it? So with a blood pressure reading that is above a certain threshold, you know your risk significantly increases of having a stroke, let's say, and you put in interventions, right? Medications or whatever. So if Haris, for instance, at the age of 60 plus, goes for a bone density test and has a reading of XYZ, and if it's elevated, it's higher than what average person in his age group should have, what does that mean? What can he do?
Okay, so firstly, this is another confusion in medicine. His bone density would be, for it to be a problem, he had higher bone density, then that would be great, because dense bones are good. So if he had lower bone density, that's what, you know, one day we're going to have a radio show about positive results and negative margins, right? Because it's a topic that I did many years ago in medical school. We did it for a public audience. And everybody just absolutely loved it. So, you know, I promise the next show we'll talk about is positive results and negative margins. But for today...
You cannot see the look on my face, listeners, but I'm wincing right now. But okay, so a healthy bone density reading should not be higher. It should be higher. And lower means it's not as dense as it should be.
Yes, Bashawi, you're wincing because if the pill is sweet, it cannot be good for you. Good medicine is always bitter.
Okay, all right.
Okay, so this is the thing. So if Haris has bone density that's lower than what is expected for somebody of his age, that puts him at risk. It puts him at risk of, number one, breaking his bones. Number two, dying prematurely. And the relationship between the two isn't exactly clear, right? We know that persons who break their hip generally don't survive. Well, there's a 50% mortality. So if you break your hip because you have an osteoporotic fracture, your mortality in 1 year is 50%. Now, if I went around saying, if you have this cancer, 50% of people die in 1 year, everybody would be very, very worried about it. But people don't seem so worried about osteoporosis because, like high blood pressure, like high cholesterol, it's a silent disease. People don't have any symptoms from it, right? So to answer your question regarding Haris, if his bone density is suspect, that means that it is less than what is expected for somebody of his age, we would look at how much lesser is it. And then we would suggest treatments which look at lifestyle modification, exercises, and perhaps medication, which would increase the density of his bone. So, and we would do that on the basis that it's a statistical concept, right? He can't turn around and say, yeah, but I've been taking this osteoporosis medication for 5 years. Why did I still break my hip? Because it's a statistical concept. And that's one of the things with sort of bone, which just adds to the confusion, because people think about it in terms of, but I took the calcium, I took the vitamin D. Why did I still have the fracture? Because it's a numbers game, right? And bone also has lots of implications in terms of, well, look, you can think about it this way. You can think about what is the effect of bone on general health and what is the effect of general health on bone. Now, we know that there is an effect of general health on bone. So say, for example, this idea of your blood calcium level. Bone regulates your blood calcium level, phosphorus levels. Bone regulates phosphorus levels. in Malaysia, chronic kidney disease is very, very common. CKD1, CKD2, CKD3, very, very common. Kidney disease affects bone health. So you've got this sort of interplay where you've got kidney disease, and as a result of the kidney disease, your bone health is poor. And what is the symptom of bone health? Well, it's not pain. Pain is not a symptom of bone health. Weakness is a symptom of bone health. Breaking a bone is a symptom of bone health. Losing height, getting stooped over is a symptom of bone health, but not pain.
All right. So much to unpack there and to absorb, but I'm still kind of stuck on that space study, right? And the connection that we can make. Can we come back to this after the break? I'm speaking to consultant orthopedic surgeon Dr. Rajesh Singh about bone health. He's hit me with a lot. I'm trying to digest it all and just really correcting a lot of myths and misconceptions about bones as these tissues, very, very crucial and vital tissues in our musculoskeletal system. Now, call us if you have questions related to your bone health, 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899. We'll be right back on Health and Living, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiaoik, and my guest consultant, orthopedic surgeon, Dr. Rajesh Singh. We're discussing bone health and referencing a recent study from a university in Germany, where they looked at the bone health and bone strength of a small group, obviously, of astronauts who had gone for space missions. And Dr. Rajesh, are you familiar with the study? Do you want to walk us through what they found and help me make that connection? What's it got to do with our bone health?
Okay, so the study basically used the technique called micro-CT. So we've talked about a DEXA scan, and a DEXA scan basically is a statistical concept. So a CT scan is an anatomic concept. So that means that I take a piece of bone, I cut it across, and I have a look at how dense the bone is. And I do that virtually, clearly, you know, I don't sort of take the person and cut their bone. So I use an imaging technique. That imaging technique is called a CT scan, the same as, you know, the one that you would use for a whole person for medical purposes, except that the machine's a lot smaller, and what it does is it allows you to look at the internal architecture of the bone. Now, one of the fascinating ideas about bone is in terms of the microarchitecture of bone. And one of the recent sort of findings in terms of the level of microarchitecture was summed up in a beautiful analogy. It said that imagine your house is the smallest unit of that microarchitecture, then you go up 12 levels. So that means first there is your house, then there is the row of houses that you are, then there is the housing area that you're in, then there is the township that you live, then there's the town that you live in, then there's the country that you're in, then there's the continent that you're on. If you take it up 12 levels, you're actually expanded to the size of the universe, if you take that analogy. And that's the level to which bone is actually organized. Right down from every single molecule that binds to every single fiber of protein, there's an organization there. So if you think about a practical level to look at it from a CT scan perspective, what you're looking at is you're saying, well, here's a cross-section of bone that we can measure in terms of centimeters, and this is how much of volume of bone tissue is in it. So if you have various woods, for example, you can have woods of the same cross-section but of different density. And people who do, you know, handiwork carpentry, you know that Chengal wood is different to Merbau wood, is different to balsa wood, right? Balsa wood's the lightest wood. You can cut it with a pair of scissors. You know, Chengal wood, you can't cut with a saw. So you can have the same cross-section of wood but different density. So what they looked at with this study is they looked at the density of the bone before people went into space, density of the bone when they came back, and how long did it take for the density of the bone to return back to normal? And the answer is that in a lot of the astronauts, it never returned back to normal. They lost about 2% of the density permanently. So what's the implication of this finding for real life? The implication of this finding for real life basically mirrors what we see. So the first thing is, if we give somebody a situation where they have severe, rapid loss of bone, Well, how do we do that? We confine people to bed. We don't let them move. That may happen involuntarily if somebody is very sick and intubated in the intensive care unit, for example, right? They're just lying there. In that situation, they lose a significant percentage of their bone mass within weeks, like 10% in 2 weeks, right? Very similar to a space situation. But in that situation, if you wanted to study these people, it'd be very hard for you to control for all the variables. That's why space studies like this are relevant, because all the variables are controlled for. The only thing that they change was they change gravity. So one of the practical implications of the study is to look at, well, in these people who lost their bone mass, we gave them exercise, we gave them medications, but they still did not get all of their bone mass back. So there's clearly some gap in our understanding of how bone is formed, absorbed, and reformed. That means that we can't get back to 100% in a practical population perspective. Because the things which are relevant for us are, we talk about imminent fracture risk. So that means that at this density of bone, it will break. That's sort of anatomical certainty as opposed to mathematical certainty. So that's one of the pieces of information that we don't have yet. We talk about the sort of unmet needs and challenges in osteoporosis, which is basically so far been find the oldies, screen them, make sure that you pick up those with the low bone density. But really, what happens with them long term? And these sort of population studies are important. And in Malaysia, we actually got this thing called the Asia Pacific Fragility Fracture Alliance Steering Committee, and it's headed by one of our local orthopedic surgeons. And it's a really powerful service in Asia where people who have fragility fractures go into a network, and we monitor and observe these people. And we say, well, what happens to these people in our population with our liaison services, with our medical services? What happens to our population when they have a fracture? Because that data doesn't exist yet.
But, you know, coming back to the effects, and we know that gravity is the one thing that changes with astronauts, what does that loss of gravity have to do with the way bones behave?
That's basically the million-dollar question. So the million-dollar question is, what does the loss of gravity have to do with the way bones behave? So say, for example, we know that exercise, like strenuous aerobic exercise, actually retards the loss of bone. So what is the connection between you using your muscles and where the muscles are attached onto bone causing stretch in terms of the turnover and formation of bone versus just the effect of gravity, right? Is the effect of gravity a direct cellular effect? Does it have sort of a micro effect on the biochemical signaling in the bone? Or is it a whole human physiology effect? So, you know, those are all the questions which wouldn't say need to be answered, but need to be asked. Because let's look at the sort of practical medical situation. Let's say somebody is bound to be in bed for a period of time. What can we do to them to prevent them from losing their bone? Well, how are we going to find out, right? So that's why these sort of bone turnover studies. So one of the interesting things about this paper that really struck me was the fact that in people who had high bone turnover, so I said that bone is formed, bone is resorbed, and it's different for every different person. One of the things that they found is that if you were an individual with high bone turnover, you were at risk of greater loss of bone. So what that tells us is that the deficiency is in the bone formation, not the bone absorption, right? Because a high turnover situation means that you absorb away lots of bone, you also lay down lots of bone. Now, if you send you to space and we compare you to somebody else who has a low bone turnover, then they do better than you do. So we can infer from that that the problem is in the bone formation step, not in the bone resorption step, right? So that insight alone is pretty valuable, because if you're a researcher and you're thinking, well, how am I going to target this problem here? Am I going to look at bone formation or am I going to look at bone resorption? Then you can say, well, I'm going to look at bone formation because I have this information, right? So I think that was probably for me the most important insight from the study, the fact that bone formation is a significant issue. And we know that bone formation is assisted by strenuous aerobic exercise. But how are you going to strenuously aerobic exercise somebody who's in bed in ICU?
But how could it be applied for people, I mean, before they reach that point? You know, I wouldn't say fairly healthy people who we're not, I mean, I'm wondering whether less dramatic levels of inactivity would eventually lead to that kind of bone loss as well?
No, it's not. So the homeostasis, meaning that there's sort of, there's this thing called thresholding. So the concept of thresholding is that if you're below the threshold, your sort of bone formation and resorption, you know, no issues. And I see patients come in and they go, look, you know, I've been a couch potato my whole life. You know, I'm in my 40s now. I've started exercising. I'm worried about my bone health. I go, you know, go away. You know, don't worry about it. If they're in their 60s, then I go, yes, let's do something about it. Because up to probably about, for women, pre-menopause, for men, probably mid-50s, early 60s, the normal biological processes are intact. There's nothing very special that we need to do to sort of maintain the bone health, right? So it's a little bit like hair, you know, whatever you do, your hair just keeps growing unless you treat it really badly. And I think bones probably the same, you know, whatever you do, it kind of just keeps going unless you treat it really badly. So this idea that we need to be specifically worried about our bone health, I think is, you know, there are other real things to worry about, like, you know, blood pressure and blood sugar and things like that. I think that as long as we have a moderate degree of physical activity, you know, 20, 30 minutes of walking every day, which, you know, you can achieve just on sort of a normal day-to-day basis, you can probably maintain the bare minimum required for your skeleton because it's a pretty robust system with lots of built-ins. The interest really comes in when the system goes askew, when something goes wrong. And this can happen, you know, there are special categories. So say, for example, if you have an inflammatory disorder, let's say that you have rheumatoid arthritis, or let's say that you're diabetic, or let's say you're on steroid medications. Now, those are special categories. And in those people, you need to maintain a higher than average formation regimen so that you don't end up with a net bone loss. But if you're medically well and just sedentary, it's really not a big deal.
But we don't want to encourage people to be sedentary either.
No, we don't. But, you know, there's also plenty of things to worry about. And one of the things which sort of I'm a little bit anti is this whole supplement marketing for osteoporosis. Drink this. Starts with a big A. And it's good for you. Yes. Right? And that sort of grates a little bit. Because it was actually in my it was in the curriculum of the medical school at which I teach, right? They were talking about factors that impact osteoporosis. And this was one of the topics, and it just drove me bananas. You know, I wrote to the faculty, and I, you know, I gave them the literature, and I said, if you teach rubbish, how can you expect doctors to come out knowing common sense?
So supplements, and you were referring to a food product, but also I think people look to vitamin D supplements, right?
Vitamin D supplements I got no problem with, right? Because vitamin D deficiency is endemic in our population. We know that. For some reason, just the way we live indoors with hardly any sun exposure, vitamin D deficiency is endemic. So that means that if you tested 100 people, 90 would be vitamin D deficient. Either absolutely or relatively. So taking vitamin D supplementation, I got no real problem with because it's a statistically sensible thing to do. But telling healthy, young, fit people that if they don't take a particular food supplement that they're at risk of osteoporosis, I think that's just unreasonable.
Mm.
Right? That's where the distinction comes in. Because so that's what I'm saying. Well, sure, we don't want to encourage people to be just couch potatoes, but I'm saying that the system's pretty robust. You know, you don't have to take your bone supplements in order to maintain bone health. You're much better off taking your blood pressure supplements or your blood pressure medication and your diabetes medication, making sure that all those medically wrong things are sort of better controlled than taking food supplements for your bone health.
Excellent. And do you have a final message for us today, Dr. Rajesh?
Good question. I think the message is bone is alive. Right, just think about it as a living, breathing, changing thing. And that'll give you a different appreciation for your skeleton.
All right. Thank you so much. I've been speaking to consultant orthopedic surgeon, Dr. Rajesh Singh. He kind of took us to space and back to earth again with some very, very, very down-to-earth practical advice. This has been Health and Living on BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.